who awakens and understands either by himself or from others the falsity and misery of this material world, and thus leaves home and depends fully on the personal safeguarding residing within his heart. There are three classes of transcendentalists, namely, one, the dhira, or the one who is not disturbed by being away from family association. Two, one in the renounced order of life, a sannyasi by frustrated sentiment. And three, a sincere devotee of the Lord, who awakens God consciousness by hearing and chanting, and leaves home depending completely on the personal Godhead who resides in his heart. The idea is that the renounced order of life, after a frustrated life of sentiment in the material world, may be the stepping stone on the path of self-realization. But real perfection of the path of liberation is attained when one is practiced to depend fully on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who lives in everyone's heart as Paramatma. One may live in the darkest jungle, alone, out of home, but a steadfast devotee knows very well that he is not alone. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is with him, and he can protect his sincere devotee in any awkward circumstance. One should therefore practice devotional service at home, hearing and chanting the holy name, quality, form, pastimes, courage, etc. in association with pure devotees. And this practice will help one awaken God consciousness in proportion to one's sincerity and purpose. One who desires material benefit by such devotional activities can never depend on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although he sits in everyone's heart. Nor does the one give any direction to persons who worship him for material gain. Such materialistic devotees may be blessed by the Lord with material benefits, but they cannot reach the stage of the first-class human being, as above mentioned. There are many examples of such sincere devotees in the history of the world, especially in India. They are our guides on the path of self-realization. Mahatma Vidura is one such great devotee of the Lord, and we shall all try to follow in his lotus footsteps of self-realization. The example of a first-class renounced devotee is given here as Mahatma Vidura. He left home while he was practically from Liverpool. He traveled to many holy places, and in this way became completely absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna, and concomitantly becoming totally detached from all kinds of material comforts and facilities. As Prabhupada points out, there are many, many such persons who do like this in history. There are many persons who, upon completion of their family duties at around the age of 50, simply leave home and take fully to spiritual. At least previously in India, it was common that people would do as such. It was common that people be more interested in the spiritual than the material. That they were known as being just as apparent from their very character that their purpose in life was not material, being spiritual advancement. Prabhupada's father was an example. He had a family and a business. So Prabhupada explained that he would go to his shop and sit for a few hours to make something. But he would spend more time doing puja than sitting in the shop. And Prabhupada explained that many times he would wake up in the middle of the night as a child and hear ding, 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 the puja is going. And of course, Prabhupada himself, he appeared to be like, in many ways, like an ordinary family man in his business. But many people who knew Prabhupada when he was living in Allahabad had similar comments to me. That when we met him, he would always be speaking something about God. And he appeared to be doing his business not with full enthusiasm. He was doing it dutifully, but his whole heart and soul didn't seem to be in it. But his real clear interest was in Krishna. So it's been my good fortune within this unfortunate material world, it's been my good fortune to have spent most of this life in India and neighboring countries. And it's been my good fortune to have met and spoken with many genuinely spiritual minded people. Of course, there are many bogus people also. The number of bogus people far outnumbers those who are genuinely spiritual. But even today we find people who are clearly more interested in the spiritual than the material, who value their own traditional culture, and who perform their daily activities with Krishna in the center. So I've met people like this in different sampradayas. Even there are people who are, we have severe philosophical differences with, but still they're following the Vedic culture in many ways. They may be smarters, for instance, but nevertheless very dedicated to the Vedic culture, notwithstanding their misunderstanding of it. Notwithstanding their misunderstanding of what the Vedic culture is. And I've also met many of the disciplic descendants of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who are not in Islam. And it's very pleasing to see how they have, by the inspiration given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that generation now that sons, grandsons, they're practicing Krishna consciousness. Now Prabhupada has taken that mission all over the world. And there are many people, such as yourselves, who speak of the Grihastas, that they have their families and their children and all these things. But their interest is in the main, or the focus of their life is Krishna consciousness. And like this, there are so many people who practice Krishna consciousness in their lives. And some may be exceptional. At that time, also, there must have been so many traveling mendicants. But Vidura was special because he had the highest realization. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's one name is Nyasi Shiromani. He's the best of all the saints. There are so many names which mean the same thing. But even apart from the very famous acharyas and preachers, there are many, many persons who have practiced Krishna consciousness seriously throughout their lives. In Rasik Mangal, it's described some of the devotees who are present in the world at the time of Rasik Ananda. They list so many names of devotees, and sometimes it will give some name, and he had thousands of disciples, and then the next name is listed. So there are no information about them except that they had thousands of disciples. So many, there must have been powerful preachers, but we don't have much information about them. There are many devotees who may be very pure devotees, but there's not much information about them. We have in the Chaitanya Charitamrita lists of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami writes that these are only the prominent devotees. There are so many others. And even most of those prominent devotees, just their name is given, no other information. So it seems it's not possible to record so much information about every devotee. But we should understand that there have been many, many pure devotees. Sometimes you might think that pure devotee means they have to be on the level of a great world-conquering acharya. Some people have the theory that unless a devotee is as empowered as Prabhupada, then he has no right to be the guru. But we see in the history of Vaishnavism, actually thousands and thousands of people, and naturally there will be more disciples than gurus. And many of these disciples are also very pure-hearted individuals, but not very well known, but very well known. In one very remote village in Bangladesh I visited, to get there you had to travel several hours by launch. By launch, it means it's a kind of small boat with an engine. And then when you get down off the ferry ghat, then take a rowing boat for another 2 hours, because that's a major transportation system in Bangladesh through the waterways. So in that village, I didn't meet him because he passed away, but there had been a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati living there. Yeah, even before I went there. And he had lived in one of the mats, but after some time he returned home and married an ideal family member. And he wasn't preaching, but he would sit home and do his sadhana and chanting, but just by himself. And one family, the young boys and their sister and their family, they took some interest in this. They used to go to visit him and ask questions. And eventually they took up Krishna consciousness fully. And as there was no one else in the area, he initiated them. And two of the brothers remained unmarried, and they actually preached Krishna consciousness very widely. It's just one of the many, many, many examples of saintly people that this country has seen and continues to see over the years. So we want to, in our preaching, we want to create a class of people who are fully dedicated to Krishna, so that by associating with them, other people can also become devotees. There's a completely different atmosphere between the home of a devotee and that of a non-devotee. In the homes of non-devotees in the modern age, the tamagun is so pervading. Tamagun may be a little modern, but people are leading totally misguided lives. But devotees' homes, they have very pure vibration. As soon as we enter, there is the smell of incense. And because the activities of hearing and chanting about Krishna regularly go on in that home, therefore that home becomes so much purer. Even buildings which were full of tamagun previously, if they become taken over by devotees, they become filled with the spiritual vibrations of the spiritual world. Many of our temples, they were previously places full of ghosts. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he rented so many buildings which were full of ghosts, because he used to get them cheap. No one else would like to go there. So similarly, on many of the buildings we take over, they were previously infested with ghosts. That Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, who's been there apart from myself and Uttama Shloka? One other. Anyway, so I think, alright, you have to confirm. It's a very sanctified atmosphere, isn't it? It's quite different from the rest of the world all around it. But that was previously a place for old people to die in. So when devotees first moved in, it's full of ghosts. But by the activities of worshipping Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna, it's now a completely purified atmosphere. So devotees purify the atmosphere wherever they go. This whole material world is an inauspicious place, but the presence of devotees makes it pure. Even the holy places get overburdened with the dumped sins of sinful people. But when devotees go to holy places, then all the sins run away. So the position of a devotee is so auspicious. I was just talking about how smarters and even non-devotees, they may be somewhat purified by chanting Vedic mantras and following the Vedic way of life. The position of a smarta cannot be compared to the purified position of a devotee. In this purport, there is a gradation of three kinds of transcendentalists. It's actually three kinds of renunciants.
Trividha. There are so many.
Trividha is three kinds. Trividha Narakasya. But the devotee's position is certainly superlative. Nevertheless, even the position of those who are not devotees but following the Vedic culture, that's still far superior to those who are not following the Vedic culture. More than once, Prabhupada was asked, what is better, one who is worshipping the demigods, all different, so many gods, so to speak, or a Christian who believes in one God? Once Srila Prabhupada was specifically asked about worshippers of Kali in comparison to Christians. Kali is worshipped by blood, chopping the necks of goats. So it's a tamasic kind of worship. But Prabhupada explained that the worshippers of Kali are better situated than the Christians because they are within the Vedic culture. So it might seem that Prabhupada is worshipping one God, is in a better position than demigod worshippers. But due to lack of knowledge of who that God is or how he should be worshipped, it's considered to be better to be within the Vedic culture. Of course, we're not recommending that you become a shakta, a worshipper of Kali. Actually, devotees are the real shakta. Shakta means worship of Shakti. And traditionally, in Bengal especially, there's always a kind of divide between the Vaishnavas and the Shaktas. You'll find that at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the ordinary Hindus who were Shaktas were criticizing the Vaishnavas. Why are they singing the names of Hari? You shouldn't do that. Chant the mantras loudly, they lose all their potency. And they said, well, there's a certain time, just like for worshipping Mangala Chandi, a form of Durga. So at that time you can sing and play instruments, but not all the time during the day. So these persons were Shaktas who believed that dharmasya hi pargavasya, not apavargasya. They believed that dharma is meant for material benefit. Actually, a materialist wouldn't describe material life as pavarga. Only a transcendentalists would do so. Pavarga means understanding of material life as being simply full of misery. But materialistic people are dedicated to try to enjoy that which is not enjoyable. So the Shaktas would criticize the Vaishnavas. The Shaktas in Navadvipa, they would criticize the Vaishnavas. And the Vaishnavas would have to suffer at the hands of the Shaktas.
И Vaishnavam приходилось страдать в руках Шакт.
Because generally Shaktas, they are materially well-to-do and well-situated, whereas Vaishnavas are not. And the Shaktas can never, so to them, the Vaishnavism just seems foolishness. Because, and they would say that, why are you worshipping this Vishnu? Because you don't get any benefit from that. Why don't you join us and worship the material energy personified, and then you'll get so many benefits like us. And say that you're just worshipping in the hope of some better future life, but we're enjoying life right now. So in this, of course, they don't understand that the Vaishnavas, they are developing their loving relationship with Krishna. That for a devotee, this material enjoyment, it's as insignificant as glass blowing in the wind. Especially in Bengal, between Vaishnavas and Shaktas. But, from another point of view, Vaishnavas are real Shaktas, they're the best Shaktas. Because they worship the Shakti of Krishna. Shakti, that is generally understood to mean Durga. But Vaishnavas know that the internal Shakti of Krishna is Srimati Radharani. So in this way, devotees, they are Shuddha Kshatriyas or purified Kshatriyas. Pure devotees, they are also Sahajiyas. Because Sahaj means that which is natural or easy. So devotees follow the natural, easy path of the soul. However, they are not Prakita Sahajiyas. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't. Generally, the term is given Sahajiya, but he specifically defined as Prakita Sahajiya. Prakita means materialistic. So they have misunderstood, they have taken the path of material enjoyment and considered that this is bhakti. So in this way, they have mixed materialistic understanding of what is bhakti. Devotees are also smarters. Smarter means one who follows the smriti or the directions given in the scripture for proper behavior. So the Gopal Bhagavad Swami is known as the smriti acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So devotees also follow smriti. Those who are generally known as smarters, they are persons who follow the what are called the Dharma Shastras, so many rules and regulations which they follow with the idea of getting material benefit in this life and in the future, and in future lives. So, again, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't just call it smarter, but when he wanted to make it clear, materialistic smarters, he called them karma jara smarters. Means those who are interested in the karma kanda section and in the materialistic path of the Vedas. Karma jara, jara. But there's no such sound in Russian origin.
Jada.
So we meet in the world many devotees who are sahajiyas, smartas, and shaktas. This may sound like Hinduism. We are simultaneously Vaishnavas and smartas and everything altogether. But it depends on the proper understanding. It's like in this report, Prabhupada is differentiating between different classes of transcendentalists. There are different kinds of renunciates. Someone who simply leaves home because it's troublesome is not on the same platform of one who leaves home being impelled by the overwhelming desire to serve Krishna. One who leaves home out of frustration is also not on the same level of one who stays at home impelled by the overwhelming desire to serve Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Jivina grihe bhajana deki grihete goloka bhai, that serving the deities at home, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was worshipping Radha Madhava, I see my home is transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. But in another song, he says, Hare na jaigo bane praveshigo holila rakshe atari. I will not go home. I will not return home. I will enter the forest of Vrindavan for the sake of finding out what is the ras, prem ras, Krishna consciousness. One time, Srila Prabhupada asked his Guru Maharaj Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that about the relative positions of Ramananda Rai and Guru Goswami. Because Ramananda, they're both from very wealthy backgrounds, but Ramananda Rai remained amidst his wealth, whereas Guru Goswami left it off. La turna matre shamanda pati shayin sada tucha rudva dina ganesha kokarimaya kovina kantasha. The six songs of Vrindavan, they kicked off all aristocratic association as insignificant and accepted only Kopi, Kanta, and Kamandala, this loincloth or this patchwork quilt and a waterfall. So Prabhupada asked that how is it that one is remaining in wealth and with his family, and the other is rejecting it all, and they're both considered great devotees. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that Ramananda Rai's level of Vairagya is not any less than that of Rupa Goswami's. Ramananda Rai is also known for personally dressing and bathing young girls so that they can dance for Lord Jagannath. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that they both accepted positions favorable for their service to Krishna. That whatever is favorable for one to serve Krishna, one should accept. So Ramananda Rai's renunciation was not any less than that of Rupa Goswami. He just did whatever was necessary, what was best, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted him to do, actually, in both cases. When Pradyumna Mishra, who happened to be the uncle of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, found out that Ramananda Rai was personally dressing young girls, he explained with this with some shock to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that he's more of a sannyasi than me. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained in relation to himself that Daru Prakriti Hare Munirati Mam, that what to speak of a live woman, even a wooden doll representation of a woman, can agitate the mind even of a great muni. But Ramananda, he, even in personally dressing and bathing young girls, his mind is not in the slightest bit agitated because he sees them as servants of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, this is possible only for Ramananda Rai, not for anyone else, not even myself. We should not imitate Ramananda Rai. Try to become Prakriti Sahajis. And we shouldn't imitate Rupa Goswami either. Prabhupada, he was once describing the renunciation of Raghunath Das Goswami. Prabhupada said, how he just take a little few drops of buttermilk every day or two. And he would chastise himself for engaging in sense gratification when he did that. So if we try to imitate that, we're not fit for that, and we try to imitate, then we will also not get an auspicious result. So we should know what is the proper level of living for us, for ourselves, so that we can execute Krishna consciousness. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das Goswami, when he was in his house all the life, Jata Yoga Vishay Kara, that you should act in a manner as a household where you can have some level of apparent enjoyment according to that which is suitable for yourself. Jata Yoga Vishay Kara. No, to Raghunath Das before,
all right, sir.
Before he left home. So all these subjects have to be understood very carefully. Basically, a devotee's attitude is one of not wanting to enjoy this material world, but to use everything in this material world in the service of Krishna. Such a person is a real sannyasi. Was that first verse of the sixth chapter? What is that? Anashatam karma. Kaya karma karoti. So sannyasi. Krishna says a real sannyasi and a real yogi is not one who simply renounces everything, but one who works as he is obligated. So how to live in this world in such a way that we can become detached from it and attached to Krishna? This is the secret of life. That requires very clear philosophical understanding of who we are, what is our relationship with Krishna, what are the senses, what is the proper use of the senses, and all these subject matters. And based on that knowledge, there should be the strong commitment to fully dedicate one's life, possessions, energy, and everything in the service of Krishna. One also requires to be under the guidance of experienced devotees. Otherwise, it can often happen that what seems to us to be Krishna conscious is not actually so. Maya is very tricky, and she often presents herself as Krishna consciousness. So we may think that we're doing something which is Krishna conscious, but actually, if the underlying intention is not clearly to satisfy Krishna, then it won't please Krishna. We might be doing the right thing, so We might be doing the right things, but with the wrong attitude or the wrong understanding. Or we might be doing something that we presume is pleasing to Krishna, but which isn't. And therefore, it's required to understand the science of Krishna consciousness in great detail, which is why Srila Prabhupada stressed so much on reading his books, studying his books, having daily classes on his books. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this class? Any word there you wanted someone else to translate? I just noticed him after you started translating, otherwise you could have caught him. Anyway.
No, it's okay. I still have time.
We're all expert translators.
You can share and observe.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. First time after a long time you translated a class for me. I didn't see you in Russia for a long time.
I was up in Russia much this year.
Yeah. Okay, any question? Yes, please. Give the mic here. We have a vapros.
Could you explain, elaborate on what is the studying of Srila Prabhupada's books? Because we can read, we can hear the lectures, but maybe studying is something else, something more.
The difference between reading and studying Srila Prabhupada's books. Yeah, once Prabhupada asked some of his disciples, do you study my books? And the disciple answered, Prabhupada, yes, I read your books every day. Prabhupada said, but do you study my books? So what's the difference between reading and studying? Well, this is a dictionary definition. And maybe you can tell me, just by defining the words. Reading, if we simply read, that may be superficial, but study means to apply our intelligence very deeply to the subject matter with the intention of understanding it in all its intricacies. Please pass the mic. Please get to this.
What is the symptom by which you can judge whether one is in Maya or he is in proper Krishna consciousness?
Well, general definition of bhakti is bhakti pradeshana bhava virakti ranyati. The one is having experience of Krishna and is detached from everything else.
Общее определение бхакти таково, что бхакти означает, что у человека есть опыт ощущения Кришны, и он благодаря этому обретает отречение от всего остального.
But this is the general definition by which we can understand if we are Krishna conscious or not.
Это общее определение, по которому мы можем судить, находимся ли мы в сознании Кришны или нет.
However, as I was mentioning, Maya can affect us in very subtle ways.
Однако я уже говорил, что Maya может влиять на нас очень тонко.
By which we may think we're in Krishna consciousness.
И мы можем думать, что мы в сознании Кришны.
And it may actually be some kind of consciousness of Krishna.
И у нас может быть некоторое сознание Кришны.
But it may not actually be very pleasing to Krishna.
Но это может не удовлетворять Кришну.
If we're performing Krishna activities of Krishna consciousness, but for some, with some personal desire.
Если мы совершаем действия, следуем практике сознания Кришны, но при этом у нас есть какие-то корыстные желания.
For instance, that I will get some material gain, or I will be respected for doing this. That's not pure devotion.
Если мы думаем, например, что делая это, я получу какое-то материальное благо, или меня все будут уважать за то, что я такой строгий последователь сознания Кришны, это не является чистым преданным служением.
Or if we have misconceptions about who is Krishna and how to serve him.
И если у нас есть заблуждение относительно того, кто такой Кришна и как нужно служить ему.
For instance, the Gauranagaris, Upper Sampradaya, they do kirtan and they worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Например, если одна Upper Sampradaya, Gauranagari, они поклоняются Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, поют киртаны.
But they misunderstand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the enjoyer of the young women of Nadia, and in this way, they do not please him by their supposed service.
Но они считают, что Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, у них есть неверное представление о Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Они считают, что Chaitanya Mahaprabhu наслаждается молодыми девушками Нади, и таким образом их служение не удовлетворяет Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
That's why it's required to perform devotional service under proper guidance and in good association.
Поэтому говорится, что преданное служение должно выполняться под руководством, под правильным руководством и в правильном обществе, в правильном общении.
So that we can be corrected if, as and when necessary.
Чтобы по мере необходимости
мы могли получить. По мере необходимости мы могли, чтобы кто-то мог поправить нас по мере необходимости.
All right, we'll take that as a sign from the Lord.
Мы примем это как знак Господа.